Every 23rd year, for 23 days, it gets to eat. And the things it leaves behind, like the thing it left in Poho County that night, the nightmare on four wheels, was a horror all its own.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus Jeepers Creepers series.
I don't know if it's a demon or a devil, or just some hungry thing from some dark place in time. I just know it's not gonna stop coming after you or anyone else it wants to.
As seen through the eyes of our hosts, Marjorie.
Just go tell them what you saw so that we can get out of here, okay?
Arnie.
I've looked that ugly thing eye to eye. I know it, and it knows me.
And Stuart.
You got your team. You got experienced men who know this thing.
The team is more than law enforcement. Anyone who's looked this thing eye to eye and lived to tell about it and wants to do something about it.
These podcasts contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
You know the part in scary movies where somebody does something really stupid and everybody hates them for it? This is it.
Listener discretion is advised.
I hear it playing while one of you is screaming. Screaming down in the dark somewhere. Screaming the last scream you'll ever scream.
Today we're discussing Jeepers Creepers, starring Gina Phillips, Justin Long, Jonathan Breck, and Eileen Brennan, directed by Victor Salva. Peekaboo, this is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
And it's Stuart.
And this is Marjorie, and I have both my peepers.
Where'd you get this series, Arnie? I thought we were doing Cloverfield.
There's a lot of things that went on here. First of all, Cloverfield's God Particle, its third installment, was supposed to come out in October. What a perfect tie-in for a Falder Nation series. Three pieces, platinum level, new release, sounded great. Wait a second, JJ can't make the release date?
I mean, who knows? I just can't trust JJ Abrams at this point. I know he likes secret ad campaigns, and this thing might come out tomorrow, and we might have been able to cover it. But as someone that likes to schedule things with a pretty good sense that it's going to come out when we are going to watch it and review it.
Looking at you, Death Wish.
Yeah, I just don't have any faith that God Particle will meet any release date, ever. I mean, it'll just, when you least expect it, it'll be like a Beyonce album and it'll just show up.
So, Jeepers Creepers, this is a movie that I had... In our very early days, long before we did a Kickstarter, we'd been working on our underrated movies book off and on for about 2 years before we did the Kickstarter. And when we first started to put movie lists together, Jeepers Creepers was number one on my list of underrated movies. It felt like a horror film that had a sequel but never quite got the attention it deserved. It was the first review I wrote for the book, and we were doing peer reviews back then. Not the greatest way to keep friendships going, I might add. And I gave it to Stuart, and Stuart went, "Wait, you didn't address about Victor Salva." And I'm like, "What about Victor Salva? I don't know anything about this guy."
Come on, yeah. If there's a reason why this is underrated, it's not because people didn't see it. I mean, this thing made money. $40 million at the box office, two sequels. People knew about it. They boycotted it. They protested it. This was a very controversial movie and a controversial career.
Yeah, once I found out about Victor Salva, and we'll talk about him in a moment, I tried and tried and tried, but I couldn't discuss the man and the movie in the space we had, a single page for a Jeepers Creepers review, and so I tabled it, I replaced it. And so now let's look at Victor Salva, who I didn't know when I went in to see this film, even though I had seen his mid-90s Disney film Powder.
Also protested and boycotted for exactly the reasons we're about to talk about.
I knew about Powder more because of the protests than anything else. It was on television. It was on Entertainment Weekly. It was everywhere I went. And I'm like, this does not look like a good movie, but if so many people are protesting it, let me give it a shot. It was not a good movie.
I did rewatch it again for this, as well as watched Clown House, which is, I think, where we should begin.
Go right ahead.
Well, here's what I know. In 1988, 30-year-old writer-director Victor Salva got some money from Francis Ford Coppola's company. He had made a short. They threw a little seed money at him, and he made a low-budget horror movie called Clown House. It is on YouTube, if you care to see it. That is the only way I could find to watch it. I don't recommend it, and that's beyond anything I'm going to tell you about the making of the production. It's just not a very good movie. It's unprofessional in its direction, its acting. The only thing you might find interesting about it is if you're a Sam Rockwell fan like I am, it is his first movie. He is the older brother of three brothers that are running around their large country house trying to avoid three insane asylum escapees who have dressed as clowns.
It sounds interesting, but you say no good?
Terrible. Clowns were a thing. We all know Stephen King had published It, Poltergeist, and all of it leading back to John Wayne Gacy, the real-life monster who used clowns to lure children into his basement of his house in Chicago and molest and kill them. And those comparisons and Clown House become very uncomfortable now because...
Yeah, what we can say legally is what's on Wikipedia. In 1988, Salva was convicted of sexual misconduct with one of Clown House's underage stars, including videotaping one of the encounters. He pleaded guilty to lewd and lascivious conduct, as well as oral sex with a person under 14 and procuring a child for pornography. He was sentenced to 3 years in state prison. He served 15 months, completed his parole in 1992, and then made a movie for Disney.
Yes, this movie, Powder, which was protested, yes, partly because no one that was on the protest lines liked the idea that Walt Disney Company, a family-friendly image, had given money to a known child predator. And the movie has uncomfortable parallels as well. It's basically a remake of The Elephant Man, or maybe Star Man. A pregnant woman gets hit with lightning, and her unborn child becomes an albino, hairless, magical creature. It's played by a 30-year-old, Sean Patrick Flannery, but it looks prepubescent. And in fact, it looks kind of like Michael Jackson, which at that time, Michael was also going through his own child molestation allegations. So was it a defense of Michael? Was it a parable about being gay and misunderstood? Was it a stance of, you're all trying to convict me of something and I'm not guilty of it? You could probably read it many different ways, but the fact that the movie is so cheesy and stupid, it's easy to say not recommend. It's a bad film, no matter what it means.
Yeah, that is my memory as well, is just not good. And it reminded me of a couple of John Travolta movies he'd make later, like Michael and things like that.
Phenomenon.
Oh, yeah, that was a bad period.
Yeah, it was very new agey, and perhaps you can see it as a Disney movie. But knowing what we know about Victor Salva, I don't know that you can't not look at anything in his career. And he did continue to make films and not feel like there is a reading into his own personal demons.
Yeah, once you clued me into this and I did a little bit of reading up that I invite our listeners to do, there's more information out there alleged, but what I can say is this. I absolutely, of course, abhor any action he took, and I have to believe in the power of rehabilitation, that prison is not just punishment, but hopefully rehabilitation.
I think this would be a different story if we were reviewing a new Charlie Sheen movie, a new Kevin Spacey movie. These guys haven't been convicted. They haven't served any time. It's unlikely that they'll serve any time. I'm not saying that Victor Salva is incapable of doing it again, but it's very likely that he may not.
We can hope.
Yeah, we can hope that he is rehabilitated and gone on the correct path here. But if someone has served the time legitimately for something they have done, I kind of feel that they've paid their debt to society. I mean, I'm not saying what he did wasn't absolutely disgusting and heinous, and I feel so awful for the victim. I'm not saying I forgive Victor either, but I'm saying at some point, when someone has served the time, that is the purpose of our society in the serving time, is you're supposed to have paid your debt, you're supposed to rehabilitate, but that's a whole other discussion for another day.
Yeah. Again, I think we're all saying that we're not judging the man. We're here to judge the art. The real question is, can you separate the art from the artist, particularly in a movie that plays so loose between the truth and this? I mean, let's just put it out there. This is a movie in which a demon is going to hunt down boys by smelling their underwear and eating body parts off of them that will make them feel whole. This is very much, I think, within a correct reading to see this is a predator reevaluating what he's done. I'm actually kind of fascinated by that because will he show remorse? Does he see his own instincts as a monster? How can we look at this movie? I'm going to use two different sets of peepers. I think I have to. I have to see the movie as a film by Victor Salva, convicted child molester, and to see what he's trying to communicate through this slasher scenario, if anything. And then I think that we do owe it to the horror fan base to step aside from that and talk about craft and say, is this movie funny? Is it scary? Does it work in the way that we would review any slasher movie, any horror series, as we've done in the past? If we could remove this obstacle, would it have an entirely different reading and change our perception?
Exactly. And I think the ability to separate the art from the artist is more important now than ever for some of the reasons Marjorie named. I mean, I know certain people who are like, I'm going to go burn all my Miramax DVDs now. And I'm like, okay, never watch Pulp Fiction again because of who funded it.
They already got your money, though.
I'll say this. If that is your stance and that's where your heart is, I respect that. I completely respect that that's what you need to do. I do think, and I've been feeling this way for a while. Maybe you guys agree with me. We are moving closer and closer to a world where that will never be possible. Because we have so much information on everyone and celebrities so out there. And we just live in front of cameras now. We document everything. It will be impossible one day very soon to consume a song, a sports team, a movie, anything, and not know the darkest secrets of the participants and the entertainers. You know, I have no love for Victor Salva. It's not like I need him to be innocent or that I'm hoping that his artistry in some way supplants his crimes. I don't care about that. But at some point, I imagine all of us will be faced with the situation in which our heroes are going to stand on trial. And will you stand with them? Can you stand with them? We will all be in that position because of the way things are headed.
Exactly. And not even illegal or dark secrets. There are certain actors who I abhor as people due to various Twitter rants they go on. That doesn't mean if they are good actors, can't lose them in the role. So I personally choose to separate the art from the artist. I understand and I do completely support anyone who can't. And it was only a handful of people, but for those who chose to get a refund on their platinum donation because it was this artist, I respect that decision completely. But I do feel as a horror movie fan, these movies are worthy of discussion. That's the tact that I feel is a step too far, is that discussing the movies should be verboten because of the artist. I think every film, despite its wretched past, is worthy of discussion.
Yeah, I mean, we discuss all kinds of things. I will continue to see movies that Harvey Weinstein made, that Roman Polanski made, that Woody Allen made. I am very comfortable approaching each work, both as a reflection of its maker and as a standalone experience that is independent of that. That's what I want to do here. And it doesn't have to negate anyone's personal feelings about wanting to in any way feel like they're participating or giving money to someone they find morally reprehensible. If that is your position, I respect that. And we'll see you on the next franchise show.
But as for Jeepers Creepers, I am coming into this as the franchise fan. I mean, I was the one trying to promote it as underrated in the book. I have seen all three films in theaters. Yes, the third one, it was difficult to see in theaters, but I saw it there. I was there opening weekend for all of these movies.
All of them? Oh, okay. Interesting. I mean, yes, we are doing this series mostly because we had a lock guarantee. There was some kind of Fathom events or something. One night only in September, Jeepers Creepers 3, it was made, it was coming out. So that was my guarantee that we can do it. But I didn't have any love for this series. I had seen the original once, knowing all of the scandal and really seeing it through that prism. That's all that I really know. It seems to me like the Creeper, the main attraction of this franchise, does have a better fit, I think, with what we're doing this fall. When you look at Tall Man and Pinhead and the Creeper, they're all sexualized slashers. They all use at various times sex as a weapon, and they are more perverse and creepy for that reason. So in that way, this feels like the right series to cap what we've been doing all fall long with all the donations.
I have seen all three of these movies, 2 and 3 at least, in theaters. I did not see 1 in the theaters. I probably saw it on DVD with Arnie as we were dating at the time. That's how long ago it was.
Aww. Yeah, the early 2000s.
Uh-huh. And I remember really liking the first one. I thought it was a good horror movie, and I was excited about the second one. Kind of excited about the third one, but we'll go into those when we review those.
It's a long time to wait. Not quite 23 years, but a lag between 2 and 3 is quite extensive.
It is, and sometimes I hate when they do that, when all of a sudden they're like, hey, by the way, we got another sequel because we got to hang on to the rights, or somebody needs some money, so they decided to pump one out.
No need to explain that to me after watching Hellraiser 9.
Yeah, I think this one may have been possibly Salvant wanting to get back in theaters after his last film, Dark House, was direct-to-video. I found it interesting, though, when he made Jeepers Creepers, the whole mythology we're going to talk about the Beast, the fact that it could only come out every 23 years and then for only 23 days... It's because Salva realized he was making a horror film and he didn't want it to be watered down with a bunch of sequels. He didn't want there to be even a part 2, let alone a part 9. He's like, if they make a sequel to this, it would have to be the Jetsons because that'll be 23 years in the future. So he intended to make a standalone one-off horror film in 2001. And then, yeah, he followed it up almost immediately with a sequel that we'll talk about.
Money Talks.
And then Jeepers Creepers 3, almost 15 years after.
Well, let's get into it. This movie I know, but why don't you go ahead and give him the plot? We can talk about Jeepers Creepers.
Siblings Trish and Derry Jenner, played by Gina Phillips and Justin Long, are driving home for spring break, taking the more scenic country roads. Their idyllic trip is interrupted when a beat-up truck tailgates them, honking and swerving aggressively. They drive on and then pass a church where they see the truck and a man in a hat and long coat tossing what appears to be bodies down a chute. Trish suggests driving on and calling the cops, but Derry insists on turning around and investigating, and what he sees at the bottom of the chute is hundreds of bodies, torn apart and sewn back together in a macabre tapestry of flesh. They flee to a nearby diner for help, but no one believes them, other than a strange phone call from a stranger saying they're in danger. Although one waitress watches as a strange man gets into Trish's car, pulls out Derry's dirty laundry, strewing it about while sniffing it. The police come to provide Trish and Derry an escort, and that's when the Creeper attacks, killing the two cops. Trish and Derry are on the run from this beast, who they now realize is not human, but seem unable to escape and unable to kill it. They finally reach a police station, and they think they're safe, until that stranger from the phone call comes. It's a psychic named Giselle Gay Hartman, played by Patricia Belcher, and she still has a vision of one of the two being killed in the dark while the old song Jeepers Creepers plays. The Creeper attacks the station and the cops are unable to stop it. It corners the two siblings upstairs and then takes its chosen target, Derry, and flies out the window. And in the last scene, we hear that Jeepers Creepers tune and see that the Creeper has torn out Derry's eyes and inserted them in his own skull as credits roll.
Yeah, that song. That's definitely one. I hope everyone knows that. When I heard the title for this movie, I just sang it in my head. I just could not. It's a good marketing tool. Usually when you're trying to get people to see a movie that they've never heard of, you get a song title that they know really well to be the title of that movie.
I agree. I think since it is kind of an old-timey song, I wonder if its recognition is dying every once in a while.
It did come back.
Yeah.
If you're an 80s alternative fan, Susie Sue and the Banshees did have Peep Show, which is sort of here. We'll talk about it. But I'm wondering, this movie begins by pulling out of the MGM logo lion starting on his eye. Do they always do that? Or am I just being sensitive because it's this movie and everything's about those peepers?
Yeah, starting in 2012, they did the zoom on the eye for the MGM logo. What's interesting is it wasn't the logo at the time this movie came out. It's MGM's logo now.
Ah, okay. Well, it's just a happy coincidence, but it really works to set the mood here as we are learning how a Jeepers Creepers, How'd You Get Those Eyes song is going to factor into a slasher film. And I got to say, you're hitting my sweet spot instantly if your concept is a horror road trip. This is something I always like. I like road trip movies of all stripes. You know, we've covered a few here and now playing The Hitcher, Duel. I always like them. It's a great way to have an unfolding sense of dread and to always be on the move.
I agree. I'm a big fan of the movie Joyride, which is in our book. And The Hitcher is one of the probably first horror movies I rented on my own that wasn't like Friday the 13th or something. I was kind of excited because it had Justin Long in it. I really like Justin Long. I think he kind of symbolizes like the late 90s, the early 2000s kind of movies kind of vibe. He's that guy. He's in a lot of stuff. He's recognizable. He's a kid in Galaxy Quest and now he's grown up.
Not that much. That was only 2 years earlier.
He looks a lot older, though, doesn't he?
He plays older well, and yeah, he was ubiquitous as the Mac guy to the point that I would imagine people ask him to fix their computers, but he was around quite a bit in the first decade of the century. I know he still works today, but I don't see him as much.
I don't know who he is. I won't hold Die Hard 4 against him.
Oh, no.
No.
There's so many people you can hold that movie against, but he was good in Drag Me to Hell and in Galaxy Quest. Those are the other couple of movies we've reviewed him in.
Yeah.
I don't know Gina Phillips, though. I didn't know her when I saw this movie, and watching it now, I'm still not very familiar with her.
I honestly, up until we did this show, thought that it was Carla Gugino from Spy Kids. You know, she was on 90s sitcoms, but it turns out it's just someone who looks a lot like her.
That's part of the problem here, is that we are going to meet these twins on the road, and it's going to be supposedly a guessing game about which one the monster is going to want. It was no guessing game for me, for lots of reasons, but part of which is that Justin Long is the star, and the girl in the horror movie always lives to the end, and I don't know who this chick is. She doesn't seem to me like she would be the thing that the creeper would want, certainly when we find out about his tastes.
She was top billed, though, and she had the bigger filmography. Justin Long had done Galaxy Quest and nothing else until the year this movie came out. He had two movies this year, whereas Gina Phillips had done a dozen or more movies in the 90s. She was a get for them to a degree.
I guess. All I'm telling you is when I saw this movie, I mean, I'll just go ahead and put it out here. The gay subtext is very heavy with the creeper. It's pretty clear most of the time he's going to choose the boy. And we actually made it kind of a game. I remember I watched this with my roommate at the time. And whenever we felt like the gay subtext was creeping in or like they were getting into some Victor Salva personal territory, we hit the horn. We were like, and that starts right here at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't take a shot because you'd die of alcohol poisoning.
Yeah, no.
I mean, let's just look at the name, The Creeper.
Yes.
When you think of The Creeper, you usually think about that guy who is a little bit awkward and perhaps unnerving to women. Like, you don't want to be the creeper at the strip club who leers too long and things like that. Don't be a creeper was always a goal among my college friends and I, because sometimes just being awkward or unintentional could lead to that kind of assumption.
Sure. I mean,
okay, but in my family, my parents used to joke whenever we'd go someplace or, you know, joke about our basement or our shed or something or out in the country that that's where the creeper lives. And I just thought it always meant a monster growing up.
I always think of like the classic stranger danger guy with the candy bar that's going to lure you into the car. Like that's the creeper to me. And it's just a predator of children.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the terminology in our generation was the guy who might follow you home in an awkward way was the creeper, you know?
But we don't meet the creeper at first. The first encounter, they haven't seen anyone for hours and hours on the road. The first thing they encounter, they're playing the license plate game. Is it gay forever or sexy forever?
Yeah, we're supposed to learn that Derry is bad at the game there by thinking it's gay fever.
Yeah, gay fever. You're right. But again, I'm honking my horn here. I'm like, why are they putting this in here? Well, because it's replete in this movie. But once they run into the creeper, his is beating you. And he certainly is.
This is so clearly a takeoff of the Spielberg film Duel, right? I mean,
yeah.
But here's what Salva says. He is a complete Spielberg fanboy, saw Jaws over 50 times in theaters. He didn't realize he had written Duel until he was actually filming it and was like, well, shit, I'm taking from Duel. I hope Spielberg's honored and not upset.
It's not a problem for me. I mean, Joyride is also a Duel remake for millennials. Again, it's a good movie. I recommended it. You can go hear that podcast. And if somebody wants to update it, I think it's a movie that can hold on to new ideas. I want to just put out here, much like Hitcher and a lot of really movies on the road, the opener is the grabber, right? This is the best part of the movie. Whatever I'm going to say about the whole movie, the best moment, the high recommend comes in this first 10 minutes. This stuff is really scary. And if there's one thing this movie's really good at, it's the jump scares. When you see that truck barreling up and they don't know it's coming, but you see it getting rapidly bigger in their back window, and that horn, man, that horn just gets you.
Well, the reason that the Duel ripoffs work is because there were no cell phones and you only had a CB like they had in Joyride. And the thought of being terrorized on the road is just utterly frightening when there's no place you can go to escape. I mean, if you think about it, if you're on this country road, there's not anything close. There's not going to be a 24-hour store to run into. You're not going to have cell service. And, you know, Duel was before cell phones.
And there was just this problem starting in the late 90s, and it went for about 20 years where there was always the rote, why can't I use my cell phone excuse? Here, it's because Gary's cell phone is dead and Trisha's car, her cigarette lighter doesn't work.
Can we talk about this car for a second? Trish has an old car.
Yep.
Every car we see in this movie is an old-timey car. I, until maybe a couple of months ago when we saw the third one, thought that this was a period piece. The cell phone didn't connect with me that he grabbed that because it was so fleeting. But everything in the movies are old-timey.
Yeah, and I'll just go ahead and say I didn't have a cell phone until 2005. So this wasn't an issue the first time I saw it. Or even now. It was still at a time when, yeah, coverage wasn't always good and old cars maybe don't have cigarette chargers. And there's sometimes where it's glaringly obvious they have to write it out and sometimes where you just go with it. And in 2001, when this is coming out, to me, it's not a sin that they can't get signal.
No, it's just every movie I go to anymore, it's like, all right, how will they write it out this time? And now they just have it usually where the phones, they're too far away for somebody to help them. They actually make the phone call, which creates a bit of a ticking clock. But for the longest time, they're like, we have to just deal with the cell phone problem. But the truck chase here is honestly my favorite part of the movie. Not seeing the driver, that caustic sound of its horn, the way that they're trying to get it to go around and it won't. And that goes back to, there's that whole urban legend, right, about the car that drives, and if you pass it, it will come after you and kill you. And there's another one about if you see a car coming at you with its brights on, it would just wait in the first person to flash them to tell them their brights were on, they were going to turn around and kill those people.
That was gang initiation. That was something in the late 90s.
Yeah, something in Death Sentence. We've already discussed that, but I never know these urban legends. There's something said here about 20 years ago, some couple in a DUI died on this very road, and she was beheaded, and yet they never found them. So how do they know she was beheaded? This was a little step too far. I was scared enough. They didn't need to make it like this is the death road. It's just the fact that they're out on an area that they've got 10 hours before they get home, and no way to contact the outside world. And yeah, all of a sudden, a really scary old truck comes barreling up and doesn't want to pass them. They didn't do anything to offend it at all. It just simply seems to be playing chicken with them.
I think the van itself that he was driving, or truck, is really scary. And I don't know if you noticed, but it's an old army medic truck. I think it's from World War I.
I don't know. I'm not good with any kind of vehicles. I can't identify anything. I knew it was a truck and felt proud.
Let's walk through the Creepers' MO. I mean, the plot summary revealed it. What we're going to find out is that this creeper can only come up every 23 years for 23 days. So is it an ancient creature? Is it a demon with weird rules? We don't know. But it's going to track the victims that has something it needs, a body part it needs, by smell. And we're going to find out, as a, I guess, efficiency, it goes and does road rage on people, so it scares the people in the car so that it can smell something and decide if that car has someone in it worth hunting.
I have a lot of questions about his MO. First of all, does he always hunt in the same area? I mean, like, in 23 years, does he come up someplace else and do this?
There's a lot of bodies underground, and we're going to see the couple that Derry talked about in that urban legend of the beheaded couple, the drunk drivers.
Right.
So I think he's lived there for a really long time.
Yes, I believe that we'll find out very quickly, once he passes them and they catch up with him, that he has a number one layer. He has several layers, we'll find out by the end, or at least another one, a backup. But there seems to be one place that he really likes to work and operate. And he's throwing a whole bunch of bodies wrapped in plastic down a sewer main.
Is it weird to have a demon with a car? I mean, just given that we're going to find out this creature can fly and everything, the fact that he wears clothes and drives a car, it's just a little bit unusual.
Well, and he dresses like he's in a country western band with that duster.
What I like about this movie and why I like the beginning so much is what we don't know. The more it starts to show, the more problematic things become. But in this beginning, which I agree with you, is hands down the best thing about this movie and a high recommend, the first 13 minutes, we don't know anything, and that's why he's so scary.
Right, we don't see the driver. And going into this movie, I didn't know much about it. I didn't know if it had a monster or a person. All I knew was it was a horror movie. It was early September, and a friend of mine and I didn't have anything to do on a Saturday that Marjorie was working, and so we went to see this movie just based on title. And so I thought it was a human during all of this, but knowing it's a demon now and on the rewatch, I'm like, this seems like an awful lot of work that you're just going to go down this pretty desolate road. At the very start, some of the first lines is that Derry blows a stop sign and Trish is giving him shit. And he's like, I haven't seen a car in 50 miles. So there's not a whole lot for the creeper to choose from here, but also probably a decent dumping ground for the bodies.
Yeah, you want seclusion. You want people to not be around because that means you can work in secret. And he needs the truck. You know, he'll traverse several counties. So I don't know where we are. I see a lot of Spanish moss. I think that we're somewhere in the south. But I presume that he'll go across a few state lines to get what he needs.
It's never stated where the movies take place and that I know of. I'd have to rewatch three to see. But the first one was filmed in Florida.
Yeah, it feels like that. It feels Alabama, Atlanta, Georgia. But here's the thing. Again, I'm coming at this with two peepers. And when I have the more critical Victor Salva, you're a criminal peepers on, I'm thinking that this monster represents a side of him that comes out every now and then. That is subtextual, that maybe he's even hoping will go away for a long time. And so I'm thinking that he does represent the sexual predator that our director maybe doesn't want to be. As it becomes more goofy, I question how sincere his atonement is.
It's hard for me to judge that part of it. I can definitely see certain things, but the 23 years, 23 days, that just feels, again, like more myth-making, more urban legend stuff. This, let's keep in mind when this came out. 2001, we were about 5 years past Scream, a few years past urban legends. We were in a horror heyday when those films were coming out again, but I think there was definitely a go-to for this kind of myth building and campfire tale storytelling.
But I think that you need to recognize with that, that this was the last movie for that campfire storytelling. Because if you look at what came out the next year, we got started on The Ring, The Grudge, 28 Days Later, and we had a whole different horror genre coming out. And then not more than like, what, 2 weeks after this came out, 9/11 happened. And that changed the world, and boogeymen were real.
So if this movie had been made a year later, do you think he would have a more serious take on his villain? Because I'm going to fault this movie very heavily for it being a 80s style horror icon. That when we get to see the creeper up close and he's going to do things that I'm going to call cute, that seems to be the wrong impulse if you're exploring the nature of sexual predators. And maybe if we were in the era of Saw and torture porn, he would be less inclined to play it that way.
I agree, because I think horror is a ever-changing genre, and when movies are written, kind of a joint thing between when they're written and then the studio deciding what's popular at the time, we kind of get a mishmash of the vision and what they think will make money.
And I think when you talk about the humor they put in here, it's false to take any studio film, especially one that's being produced by MGM, and Francis Ford Coppola was involved. He came to the set. He wasn't just a name on the line. He got Salva his start and stuck by him when he got out of prison. I think that you can't remove commercial considerations all in the intent of art. It may not be his intent to downplay the seriousness of his own sexual deviancy, which I do believe he has consciously or subconsciously written into the Creeper, but a killer that made some jokes was still the norm right there at this time. And the Creeper, fortunately, never speaks. There was a scene where he spoke, and it was left on the cutting room floor. And MGM wanted him to speak even more, but they filmed one scene later on, and I'll talk about it when we get there, but the Creeper did actually say English words.
Yeah. Speaking of subtext, it's a big thing with this director. It was in Powder, it was in Clown House, the children were running around in various states of undress, ass crack, underwear shots. We just have to have a scene of Justin Long peeing by the side of the road. That's something we needed to have here.
Hey, Trisha was peeing too, but
yeah, you see her in her underwear.
And hidden.
I'll say this. It's been in the news a lot about the male gaze in filmmaking. And I wasn't quite sure what that meant until I saw Victor Salva's films. It is very clear that he likes to film young, hairless, shirtless men and to linger on their bodies in ways that maybe I'm more sensitive because I know the director, but I don't think so, because I thought this about Powder before I even knew much about the director. It just feels ogling.
I didn't know anything about the director until this year, and I even noticed in watching 1 and 2 that it was unlike any other horror movie, as, first of all, no boobs, which, you know, usually that's a big thing. And the women were mostly dressed, not really wearing revealing clothes, but the men sure took their shirts off a lot.
Yeah, I mean, let's just call it what it is. When gay directors direct, they tend to focus on things that straight directors don't. And there is a precedent for this. I mean, we've looked at some Clive Barker movies where, yeah, Scott Bakula is going to spend a whole lot of time without a shirt on. David Decato has a whole career of low-budget movies in which boys do not put on shirts. That's fine. I like, actually, the way that challenges people when they're watching a horror movie. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't get to watch this maybe with the same voyeuristic ways. I'm now more conscious and maybe even more threatened by this director and this predator. It's also worth pointing out that while it's homoerotic, this is not pedophilic. I mean, Justin Long looks young, but he is about 20 years old when he's filming this. He is a college-age character, so this is not a minor. When the Creeper chooses him for his pink underwear, it's at least not Clown House. In fact, I noticed their license plate is SVM421, which I think might be saving him for 21. So maybe that's repentance. I don't know.
I had read IMDb trivia that said it was supposed to be Save Me, but I like your interpretation a lot better.
I feel better if I think that he's going to wait till they're 21.
At least 18. But then we get to this movie's Scream moment, because they saw the creeper throwing the bodies down the tube, and I'm in theaters as they're seeing this, and Darius like, well, I'm going to go check that out. And I am right with Trish here, where she's like, you know, in horror movies where people do something really stupid and are hated for it? This is that moment. I'm like, yes, this is really fucking stupid.
It's stupid enough for you to not believe what he's saying. There's nothing about this character up to this point that sounds moralistic, altruistic, would step out of his own comfort zone to help someone in need. I don't believe him. He's not doing it because he thinks he can save a life. I think that he is drawn to that sewer main. I think that there is something, maybe even a premonition, about his own death that is leading him. Morbid curiosity is taking him back to that. He doesn't want to give it up.
It's so hard to tell. This is the big leap of logic that you have to go with on this movie, because theoretically, because of the road rage, the Reaper should have already gotten a sniff of this boy's fear and known that he had some good eyes on him. But even with that, are we to think that if they hadn't done this boneheaded move, if they'd just gone on and said, hey, we saw something weird at the church, that they would have lived?
Well, wait a second. Who does that in a horror movie? Who actually drives on to the next stop or to the authorities and doesn't investigate the weird shit you just saw? You wouldn't have a horror movie if they did that.
But you do want it to be character motivated. I mean, I know what you're saying, Marjorie. For the sake of the audience, it's a lot more fun if these people step into a situation where they're way out of their element than if they go get 20 state troopers. But when you put yourself in these circumstances, it's very hard to think of the moment in which I say, yes, I would be better at this than the cops. I would not go back for a total stranger, which may not even be a body. Again, they can't even confirm that what they saw was a human being. It looked like it, but it's quite a leap that they make.
And I guess that's where I would come in, is if Marjorie and I were driving and Marjorie's like, let's go call the cops. And I'm like, we're not even sure what we've seen. I would be hesitant to call the police without knowing what I'd seen. And so that might be enough to draw me back to make sure I saw what I thought I saw, but it wouldn't be enough for me to go down a pipe.
Yeah, and beep, beep, this is when I put on those peepers, I think about that subtext of the curiosity of going in the dank, smelly, feces-laden pipe. I think that you can read a homoerotic curiosity is actually drawing him into this lair.
You know, you're going for the deconstruction and more power to you for it. I definitely just see the classical storytelling here of a birth, a character going through a tube, going underground, and emerging different. When he emerges from this, he will have seen horrors and he will be targeted.
Sure.
Did you guys notice when Derry was falling, you know, he is scared by some rats and starts kicking and then gets mad at Trish for dropping him, like you can hold a kicking person. But when he falls, that is a really weird shot. It's like he's floating. I didn't even think he was falling until like the dirt underneath him went out.
It's slow-mo and it definitely has some kind of almost heavenly light. It's a kind of a Christ pose he's falling into.
Yeah, I think they were like zooming at the same speed he was falling and it made it look like nothing was moving. It just caught me off as odd, and I didn't know if either of you saw it.
And what he sees, he does get grabbed by one of those bodies. There's one still alive for a few seconds, and it is a young man whose tongue appears to have been cut out.
And something inside's gone, too, because there's some harsh stapling.
Yes, exactly. You peel it back, and yeah, the sutures are quite ugly there. And there's a wall full of them. Yeah, resin, almost like artwork. I don't know why you would do this except to remind yourself of all the things that you are. It's trophy.
I'm not quite sure. It seems like it didn't jive with the motivation we find out in a little bit. I mean, I thought he was using it for body parts, but then it also looks like he's recreating the Sistine Chapel, but with real people.
I'm torn on this because on the one hand, I see the creeper as a beast. He has wings. He roars. He doesn't talk in the cut we see of the movie. He hunts. He sniffs. So to me, that's bestial. And so when I see bodies up like this, I know my first reaction was to think of aliens and the way that the aliens would resin people up on the wall, only here, maybe not for reproduction, maybe just home decoration. But I then have to take this into account with the person who lives in this dank, dirty area has a car, presumably gets oil changes once in a while. You know, he has to fill up with gas. It's not a magic car. Does he fill up and dash, or does he go up and say, I'll pay on a credit card? How does this work?
What you're saying is that this movie collapses once you start to learn the answers. They're Mogwai rules is what I'm going to call them. It's like, yeah, there's some rules, and if you just stick to the fundamentalism of them, it makes sense. If you start to ask, but if they eat after midnight, when can they eat again? Those kinds of things will be not rewarded here. They cannot be rewarded, and it is a huge detriment to this movie that it moves away from what I would call a genuinely scary goosing duel remake into a very muddled origin story for a monster I don't feel like we know well enough. And one of the things I will say that I think that they really messed up on is we will find out that he eats things that he needs, almost like organ transplant, replacement. This creature should be blind. It should be sniffing things out because it literally cannot see.
It has cataracts. I did notice that.
But it should not be able to see at all. Otherwise, why eat eyes? Maybe, you eat something else. But it's going to specifically be looking for delicious eyes because it cannot see. And I think that you needed to show vulnerability with this creature. Instead, it just seems to be do anything. I mean, from what little we see of it, it seems to have the power to transform into whatever it needs to be.
I just thought that he needed new body parts when he comes up after 23 years because things wore out during his hibernation. I didn't notice the cataracts at all, but I'll take your guys' word on that. So I thought just what would happen is he emerges like, you know, a butterfly, I guess, if you will, and then has to slowly replace parts to continue his feeding. Because that's what it's feeding, right?
Yeah. I think he eats so that he can exist. He is essentially immortal as long as he digests parts, and he has, you know, he's picky. It's like plastic surgery, I suppose. I want to have his eyes and his fingers and that person's abs and, you know, what have you. He's got very specific ideas about how he wants to look, which makes him beg the question, why do you look like that then? But I don't know. There is so little to understand and so little reward to asking why once they get into the creeper that you wish the movie could just have been Duel, where he was just a truck and not a man.
Just to take a step back from the creeper, who is the star of the trilogy of films we'll discuss, I want to say I like these two kids, Trish and Derry. I think that I buy them as siblings with their kind of snappish crap that goes on. The fact that they play the license plate game. Going through this entire movie, I have no problem with either actor. I have no problem with their relationship. I actually really like them. And the first time I saw this movie, I was truthfully on the edge of my seat rooting for them both to survive.
I don't attribute that to liking the actors as much as just feeling like Salva is really in control. You know, he's got a good cinematographer that's moving around on cranes, and there's an intensity to this opening that has me on edge. These people are kind of generic, but I like them enough to care.
You know, I kind of had a bit of nostalgia with it because my brother went to school 4 hours away each way, and I'd often go get him for holidays and weeks off and stuff, and we would sometimes take the country roads home and have fun listening to tapes we could find at the gas stations and truck stops, and so it's kind of like that to me.
Yeah, everything about this seemed believable, including the what are you going to tell our parents about you breaking up with your boyfriend kind of thing that never really goes anywhere. We don't spend a whole lot of time with these characters before the truck comes up, but as they get into this, with the exception of Derry being like, I'm going back, I'm going down the tube, I'm going to see this really horrific scene, I completely am with them the rest of the movie. And as for what's under there, I just thought as soon as I saw this, I'm like, well, this really does kind of go with Hellraiser here. We're taking apart and sewing back together pieces of flesh. This was an even more perfect third part of our donation drive than I'd realized.
Now, I'm going to go with something different and something obvious, another series we've covered. It starts as Duel, but very quickly it decides it's Texas Chainsaw. I mean, just the idea of making rural America a place that's scary, that's what Texas Chainsaw predicates on, that ugly rednecks are what urbanites fear most. And I started thinking that once they finally get to the diner, This was a whole society, a whole community that was complicit in what the Creeper was doing. That the Creeper wasn't the only villain. Just like in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's the general store where they sell human body parts as food. I thought maybe everyone here in the diner that was looking at them askance knew exactly what was chasing them.
I think we find out they don't. They just think these two are crazy.
Well, one of the things that I had asked was, if people are disappearing from this area every 23 years and no traces of the bodies are found, don't you think that someone along the way would be like, guys, we got something going on?
And I got thinking about that, because 23 years before this, assuming this is taking place in 2001, so 23 years before that would be 1978. And I think in the 70s, you still could have tall tales and people disappear where you aren't able to track them down because we didn't have the internet and all the Big Brother cameras and everything.
No, back then we had the Time Life book series, Mysteries of the Unexplained.
I remember the commercials.
Oh, yeah. Those are great. But there is a town north of us called Lawndale that in 1977 had a young child picked up from his yard by a large winged bird and carried for a couple hundred yards before the mother's screams caused this bird winged creature to let it go. And it had a wingspan of over 12 feet, you know, tip to tip.
Oh my God, what a nightmare. I don't like birds anyway. I mean, people that listen to the show know I hate like ostriches and emus and all that. Just they're ugly, repulsive creatures. Jurassic Park got it right. Like, birds are the real monsters.
Well, this is called the Lawndale incident, that somebody was abducted by a large winged creature.
That should not exist in this part of the country or world.
Well, yes, that's correct. Yes.
I mean, I think it's worth pointing out, eagles do not have 12-foot wingspans.
No, and here's what's really creepy, is there have been people who've taken photos, even recently, of giant winged creatures roosting in giant trees in Illinois.
So, yeah, in the 70s, the Creeper could come up, abduct a few bodies, and it could just be drunk driving and we never found them type of thing. I'd actually be interested in seeing a period piece Creeper story. I think that would be cool, is to go back to 1978 or 1955. That would be my inclination for sequels for this, more than moving forward.
See, now, I thought all along this is a period piece, so I would be all down for this.
Well, at this point, we don't even know it can fly. They are a little distressed that it got back to the diner without the truck and somehow raided their laundry. He's taking a whole bunch of dirty laundry, and they make a point of saying all his whites are now pretty pink, honk, honk.
Well, they said that, yeah, in the car, that he doesn't know how to do his laundry.
So it got back under mysterious circumstances, but they've also had a lot of shots with crows and ravens and all calling. I didn't know whether the creature had some kind of connection with birds, and I don't know, you know, it could have minions. You know, we just don't know anything yet. And again, I think everyone in this diner is complicit when they're not helping them. I mean, no one in a horror movie enters a crowded cafe and gets 30 new friends, except Maximum Overdrive, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's when we end the movie, I think that's what you have to end it at. When the waitress is like, there's a strange guy pulling your panties around, I think that they suddenly believe it.
Did you guys at any point think that it was the girl's panties?
No.
Okay.
Because she was the one that judged him for bringing home dirty laundry.
Yeah.
At this point, we know who the Creeper's after, pretty much. But they're going to try to tease us and make us not know until the end of the film. They're going to try to trick us, but I pretty much knew that it was going to be Derry.
No, it's a real fault of this movie, is that they cannot disguise. When you have something so overtly homoerotic, the girl is not even factoring in here. She doesn't have star wattage. She doesn't seem to have a story. It's already picked out his underwear. We know. And then we really know that the monster has arrived when the phone rings. And this was my definite memory of the one time I saw this movie, was that I was really on board until they bring in the magical Negro character, the horriest of cliches, and we have this psychic who is going to be feeding all of the backstory that is not written into this movie.
It is a really bad cliche, and at this point, we don't know that she's African-American. We just know some stranger's calling on the phone asking if they'd seen the cats yet, and to watch out for the song Jeepers Creepers, because we're halfway through the movie and we haven't heard that little ditty yet.
And I was disappointed because there's nothing creepier than an old-timey song. Like with that scratchy old-timey record, you know what I mean?
It's been overplayed though. I'm going to make that argument. I said on the Halloween 2 show, the first Halloween 2, that was my introduction to musical irony, that when they played Mr. Sandman and Mike Myers Burned, that did blow my mind. Like, I didn't know you could take something that sounded so innocent and wholesome and layer it with such a sinister vibe here. But by this point in the movies, I just want to point out, Denzel Washington had a really bad movie called Fallen, where time is on my side. And then there was a really stupid Annette Bening horror movie called In Dreams, Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree with Anyone Else But Me.
I've seen all these pieces of shit too.
Yeah, it was just being done to death. And so while I do think that Jeepers Creepers could be a scary song, the way that they use it here, it begs questions. Again, Mogwai questions. Okay, so he needs eyes, he's gonna play this song. What if he needed lung?
Yeah, aqua lung.
Does he have a song for every body part? Is it Dancing Cheek to Cheek? Blue Moon when I need an ass? Strange Fruit when I need genitals? I got you under my skin?
Detachable penis? Yeah, I just liked the gimmick for this, and my memory was every time the creeper came, that song heralded him. But that's not really the case. In fact, it's only going to happen once in this movie.
Yeah. There are ideas here that are not fleshed out. And I feel like the more that they are opening it up to those questions, the more this movie is falling apart. The suspense of it is just leaking out like a lead balloon here. It's just, you can feel all that tension scene by scene from this point forward. And it's a general rule for road movies. Once they stop in a certain place, you feel the momentum go. The road movies are most thrilling when you're on the go, and when natural killers get stuck in a prison, it just isn't as good. It just can't captivate the way that being on the open road can.
But they do get on the move again. They do have a police escort from the diner, and we think they're going to be safe, but it's way too early in the movie. And this is where we start to see some of the creeper's non-truck powers. He takes out those two cops, ripping them through the roof. He has an axe, so he's an armed creeper. And he's going to eat the tongue of one of the cops.
Who looks like a stripper. Beep, beep.
And I don't know if you guys noticed the sign in the background that says, "Tastes so darn good," as he's eating the tongue.
I did not, but I'll have to look for that next time I watch it.
Here's the thing. If I am wearing the one set of peepers that says, this is a silly horror movie trying to bring back the 80s Freddy vibe, I say, they're doing a pretty good job. When I think this is a man wrestling with his demons about what it has led him to be a sexual predator, I go, I can't believe you're going to make a severed head joke. I can't believe he's going to like open up the truck to take the bodies and then we see it open again to throw the head in. I mean, there's definite stuff that is played for broad laughs, and that is not what I expect if someone is looking for penance.
Victor Salva never said he's looking for penance, so...
Did he ever say he was sorry?
Yes.
Okay, because it doesn't feel that way to me. I would feel like someone that was genuinely sorry. We're attributing that he paid his debt to society, but does he feel like he committed a crime? You watch a movie like Powder, and there's half the movie Powder is screaming, "You want to lock me up, and I don't deserve it."
Yeah, he has issued a statement. I mean, how could he not? That says, "How deeply I regret my actions. I paid for my mistakes dearly. Now, nearly 10 years later, when he did that, I'm excited about my work as a filmmaker and look forward to continuing to make a positive contribution to our industry."
Yeah, I just feel like this close to the incident, we're 10 years out from when it happened. I just feel like it's awfully tasteless to be so flip about it.
I like that this movie has humor as a horror movie fan. It's a dark humor, and separating the art from the artist, I would like this movie more because it has intensity when he's coming after those cops, and I'm like, what the hell is he? What is going on? And then it's lightening up with "Tastes So Darn Good" as he's pulling the tongue out from the head, and at first I thought he was kissing the head, and then...
Well, beep, beep. I mean, that's exactly what he wants you to think.
I do think the humor was good in this, and I like some of the weirdness in it because it does kind of put you off kilter a little bit, and horror should make you uncomfortable.
Here's the thing, you can play it either way, but I would think this director would want to play it more like Pinhead in the original Hellraiser. You would want this monster to be frightening. You would really want to not ever let a giggle escape. Yeah, you like to use comedy as a way of releasing tension in a horror movie, maybe any horror movie, but I don't think you want a jokester at the head of your movie if it's channeling your inner demons. I just don't think that's the right vibe and the right move. And I have to believe Salva approved of it. I don't believe this was enforced upon him by Francis Ford Coppola or the studio.
Oh, no, the studio wanted it out. And Salva said, no, I want to keep it in.
Again, that makes me really question a lot of where this is coming from.
Assuming he's consciously attempting to atone.
I can't imagine that he doesn't know how it will be perceived.
And yet, sometimes the most obvious things are the ones that the person nearest to them doesn't see.
No, true. Admittedly. Again, I am not basing any of this on interviews I've read, web research. I don't know anything about how he feels about anything. I just am looking at knowing what I know about the crime and then seeing this as a response. When I put on those peepers, I don't like it.
And Shout Factory put out a couple of really glorious editions of both the first two movies. Tons and tons of bonus features. How many times do you think child molestation is mentioned?
I don't know how you don't, but you're probably zero, right?
Zero. Zero.
Yeah.
In hours and hours and hours of footage. So, yeah, he doesn't bring it up. He's never going to say on the record, or maybe he will when he's retired and, you know, doesn't give a fuck anymore. He's never said that this is his way of personifying his own demon.
Yeah, maybe he's not aware of it, or maybe, like many artists, they don't want to talk about what it means to them and they prefer to let the audience figure it out. But this is what I'm looking at. We're all agreeing it's comedic, so if you're looking at it through my peepers, that's the wrong way to go. And it's always a wrong way to go with a cat lady, right?
If it's Eileen Brennan, I might go with it. I, of course, loved her from Clue, which is in our book.
Private Benjamin is what I think.
Oh, that was her?
Yeah. You know, she was both on the show and in the movie, got an Oscar nomination out of it. But yes, also Mrs. Peacock in Clue, and quite good in that. She's doing what she does. I just don't know why you want that in this movie at this time. I mean, I just don't know what you get out of a crazy cat lady who's worried about the cops taking her cats away and comes out with a shotgun.
Cat ladies are creepy?
I think they could have gone one way with it that they didn't, is that she survived so long in this area because the creeper is afraid of cats or something. But I guess that mm-hmm. might be going back to Sleepwalkers a little too much.
It doesn't matter where they pull it from or if it's from somewhere else. You need to establish more rules. I mean, these Mogwai rules, they need to fill in here. One thing we are learning that's a compliment here is we're seeing more of him, and it's a pretty convincing makeup job. We're seeing him leap and do Neo moves as he jumps on the roof and what have you. That wicked smile, it is unnerving. When he smiles at them coming out of the house with the woman, like, I think impaled on her own shotgun. Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah, that was when he was going to talk too. And the line he was going to say was, "She don't smell so good. Not like you, Derry."
Oh.
And yet they were still going to try to play it later like we didn't know who he was after.
Yeah, okay.
But I think what it adds is a body count, and it adds a little bit more humor with your cat hoarding. And it's another stop on the road trip. I think what they were going for is quirky characters and the creeper. I'll agree with you completely, though. I like his design a lot. He's like a gargoyle, and he just takes that coat and hat off. But this movie is almost... Given the context we're discussing, I regret saying this, but it's almost like a creeper striptease. Because he starts off and he's got the hat and the coat and you see nothing of him. And as the movie goes on, he loses the hat, he loses the coat, and little by little, he reveals a little bit more of himself. And at the end of this scene, we're going to find out, damn, he has wings?
Yeah. He's a little taff cap up until the wings come out. And then I'm like, oh, he's a bat. I didn't know. But again, anytime we're on the road in the vehicle, I think it's well shot. I think it's suspenseful. It's what I want to feel. I like all of this stuff. It is very Scream for someone to say they're never dead when you run over them. Do it a few more times. But I think that's right. I think that if you're making that kind of self-aware slasher movie, these scenes are working. Cat Lady, not so much, but they rebound when they are finally fighting the monster, and we're seeing what it can do. It can run up the car when you race at it.
Yeah, that was a nifty little move, and then the second time it doesn't, though. I don't know why it couldn't twice, but they run over it several times, and it still has the wings stick up. I thought it was going to fly away right then. Like, maybe it was instinct. The body was dead, but the wings were going to save it or something, but hey, Derry and Trish do what smart people should do. Get to the cops. But I'll admit this much. This movie is now an hour in. It's 90 minutes. It feels like we shouldn't spend a whole half hour at this police station climax.
Yeah, you know, it's important to have stops along the way. And certainly, it's a more grandiose climax to have six people with guns. I mean, they're riot gear cops. They're in a different county, so they haven't been dealing with some of the things that Stripper Cop knew about. But they seem to be like they should be more formidable for Creeper. But if this is about the hunt for our two twins, you want them to be alone. You want them to not have allies. And you do not want Giselle, Gay Hartman, beep.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this character, but we needed somebody to give us the backstory.
I kind of felt like she should have been inserted about 30 minutes earlier, though.
The problem is she doesn't know what she's talking about either. It's not like she was around 23 years ago. She had a dream, and maybe her dreams are wrong. And we're going to find out sometimes they are wrong because she's wrong about what it's going to grab. She's not a reliable narrator. She's not aware of the creeper. She can't really tell us anything concrete, and she's so bad.
Actually, she knows exactly who it's going to grab. It's a misdirect to us, the audience, and I think it's a cheat, but this whole time she knows it's after Derry.
How do you know that she knows that?
Well, because Salva and the actress both said it.
Oh, well, the one thing I wish, if it's eating things, I want the creeper to eat the ham off of this actress and her performance. She is bad. I mean, a killer. I remember the first time I watched it, at this point, it was Red Arrow from this point over. She ruined the movie for me the first time. Knowing she's coming this time, I was more prepared for it. It doesn't hurt as much, but it's still such a terrible choice.
She was very stereotypical for a warning siren. She was overwrought with it, and at this late in the movie, she just wasn't useful other than to try to instill some more suspense when we've lost it at this point.
We needed somebody to give a backstory somehow. A psychic is as good a way as any, unless you're, I mean, the other way to go is you have a hunter come in who hunted it 23 years ago and came back a little too late, but I don't mind her as much as you do. I agree that she's a little bit silly and a little bit over the top, but I've never hated her.
Okay, well, then you definitely feel differently about her than I do. I got a fix for you. How about their psychic? How about maybe the reason why they went back to begin with was that he had dreams of that place, and he wanted to have it confirmed, and he knows very well that he's leading to his own death, but he can't resist it. I mean, to me, that's more tragic, it's more serious, and you don't bring in this sitcom actress for what is just mood-killing patter. That doesn't conclusively solve anything. For all that she talks, I still, like, I don't feel like I understand this monster any better.
I mean, we know it's psycho, and we know that it wants to eat people now, and it reveals that license plate isn't beating you, it's be-eating you.
See, I just keep getting more questions about the creeper.
How could you not?
I feel like he needs a prequel or something so that I can find out the answers to all these questions. Like, how does he even know about vanity plates? Mm. You know, these are the things I'm worrying about when I'm watching this movie. And in the parts where nothing really was going on.
In the 23 years from 78 till now, he got by on watching Bumper Stumpers.
Who's renewing his license sticker every year?
And what's he doing in the 23 years of hibernation? Again, so many questions. I mean, if you were to try and take this character seriously, you were completely confounded. There's no way. It only works as some kind of joke, I guess. I mean, it only works as comedy at this point because it's so absurd.
And yet they still try to play him now like the Terminator. I mean, this is a replay of Cameron's original Terminator. Salva is also a huge fan of Cameron's. And This, to me, plays just like when Sarah Connor is in the police station and you think she's safe, and the Terminator comes in and kills all the cops.
I got a little more Aliens out of it, just basically because of this creature and the way it could crawl on walls, crawl on the ceiling. I that was all actually cool. We get very little of it, but we hadn't seen that yet. But that it can just defy gravity was really neat.
See, and that's just more of it revealing itself. That's what I like about this movie, is every scene with the creeper, you see something it couldn't do before. I absolutely love the scene where the creeper is behind the one-way glass and we see the siblings yelling at each other and you can't hear because it's soundproof and he's just watching them. I love that scene. There are some great shots in this movie, and that's one of them.
Yeah, it's a well-photographed, again, particularly with the rigs they have on the car and all of that. Sometimes you watch road movies and you're like, oh, I feel claustrophobic. Here, the camera was always moving, even though we were in a confined space. But did it eat the predator? Because it's got parts of its talons around its head. The final reveal I don't even get. So its head is like a crown of fingers?
I don't know what's going on there. It's almost like it was just added for spooky effect. But what it reminded me of, the little tiny cute dinosaur in Jurassic Park that killed Newman.
Okay. Yes, that's exactly what I went to also, is whatever dinosaur that was cute. And then it hissed, it stuck out the fins from its head and spit the tar in his eyes before it ate him.
So it was a toxin, not just tar.
Okay.
I think they called it the Dilophosaurus. And an expandable neck frill.
Oh, to me, it's total predator, you know, like with the way it would use its mouth. It's like got four prongs for a mouth. Anyway, my point is it should be unveiling its most fearsome defense or weapon, but it just seems to be like a photo shoot. It stands in front of the cops, just takes that moment to say, yeah, I'm badass, and fly away with who we knew he was always going to take.
It's like he doesn't know, though. Or maybe he doesn't see very well because he has to sniff them both all over. I like his bifurcating nose, too. Like, his nose opens up for even more sniffing power.
You didn't think that that looked like a body part? You guys don't have exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I gotcha. Freudians can look at any movie and find all of that stuff. I definitely see a sexual subtext to this, but as far as what the body parts work on this creature, I assume that if it was eating human beings and using their body parts, it would look more human than it actually does. What it's been eating, I don't know if it ate the cats and some wildebeest as well, but it is not human.
No. It is strange, though, because we get back to its lair, its second lair, because we heard earlier that the church was set on fire. So the creeper was cognizant enough to go, shit, the cops can't find my art, and set it all to blaze.
Yeah, 500 bodies, poof, that's gotta hurt. I mean, those were trophies. You know it kept it around simply for the aesthetic, to burn down its house because six cops from the neighboring county might come over.
It's kind of like Victor Salva taking a bulk eraser to his VHS collection.
Yeah, aww. Perhaps.
I mean, if you're going to go through those eyes, right?
No, it begs a very good question of how serious are we to take this character and how repentant is it? I never thought when I watched this movie, and maybe it's why people like it, that the bad guy would win. I always assumed, yeah, maybe one of the twins was going to die. There would be a final girl, probably.
I don't think they were twins. I think they were just siblings.
No, she says a line to the fact that I have everything that he does, and I took that to mean that they were born at the same time.
Now, I thought they were different ages. I thought she was older.
Not confirmed. Like many things in this, choose your own interpretation because they just haven't worked it out. And I'm going to just fault that. That is not look at them allowing us the ability to interpret. That is, we don't have answers, so let's ignore it. We'll focus on what we like, which is the creeper eating thing.
Yeah, and when we get to his layer two, we find out, first of all, he's the original hipster. Before vinyl had a comeback, he had a phonograph.
Yeah. This sort of just is dumb, right? It's like a dumb punchline now that this song that could have been scary in the right context is now just like, well, he got the eyes. But,
See, and that's something I didn't get, though. That was the punchline to me, is we'd heard, yeah, the Susie and the Banshee version of the song earlier before the car chase.
We heard a artist, they couldn't afford Susie, but they bought the song and had a sound-alike sing it.
Yeah. And now we hear the original version, but I never got he wanted Derry's eyes. That was something I just knew he wanted to eat Derry. I didn't know he wanted to eat his eyes and that they have the eye come through the eye hole. They actually put Justin Long in the creeper makeup so that it was Justin Long's eye looking through the eye hole.
Oh, nice.
I think this is a very underwhelming punchline to a movie that leaves me befuddled. I'm like, that's the end?
See, and that's exactly how I felt, is I'm like, my God, that's the end? He got away? He got his victim? He killed Justin Long? Nobody's putting him in the ground? That was revolutionary to me, that the villain was so dominant in the film that he won.
Well, I mean, it's not the first time that's happened.
But it was not what I was expecting.
I felt like, to me, we were hovering around so long at the police station afterwards. I was like, oh, is there going to be another climax where they go and rescue him? No, they're just trying to get to 90 minutes.
Now, this ending isn't the ending that Victor Salva had in mind. It wasn't supposed to be that the Creeper got Derry's eyes. The original ending was going to be this big, he describes it as a James Cameron-like climax, where the Creeper comes after Derry and Trisha at the police station, and they run out of the police station, and the only vehicle with keys in it is the Creeper's truck. So they decide to steal the Creeper's truck and try to flee. The Creeper jumps on the truck. Derry pushes Trisha out, and then sacrifices himself to collide the truck with an oncoming train, killing both him and the Creeper.
Oh.
The idea of doing a different ending would be that it would tell us more about the monster. That's the ending I would... This feels like more of a punchline on Derry. Like, we get at the end of his story, but this main character, it dies? I mean, you know, movie dies, but it's still, that was the idea to get rid of it?
Yeah.
Nah, that would just be even more mystifying. You at least understand why it was playing Jeepers Creepers.
That is true. Yeah, they didn't have the money for it, so Salva rewrote the ending. And I agree, I like this down ending a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, down endings in horror movies last longer. They typically have a stronger power because evil triumphs over good. You remember when that happens.
Well, let's not stretch out this show anymore. Marjorie Stewart, do you recommend Jeepers Creepers, Marjorie?
I like this movie. I have a soft spot in my heart for it. I'm not sure why, because when I do watch it, I'm left with a whole bunch of questions about the Creeper. But does that add to his mystery? I think it kind of does. Since this movie falls at the tail end of our horror genre here that has a creature that's attacking late teens, early 20s people, that it's a must-see. I like it. I'm going to recommend this movie. I think that it's fun. I think it's not too scary unless you're regularly traveling on two-lane roads and maybe have dirty laundry in your car and no cell phone. But I like it, so I'm going to recommend it.
Stuart.
Lots of peepers here. When I take the Clarice Starling peepers and look at Salva's art like paintings in Lecter's cell, I find it lacking subtext. If he was trying to communicate something about his predispositions, that it comes through in the final product. I don't see insights, I don't see remorse, and I think that playing in a joke way is, well, it's just tacky. It's Red Arrow. If this is what you're looking for, Victor Salva, convicted child predator, talking about that through his art, it's not here. You have to ignore that in order to appreciate that movie. And whether you can do that or not means overlooking a whole lot. If you do manage to do that, what are you looking at? Well, a pretty good kickoff to a movie that completely falls apart halfway through. Honestly, if we had covered Cloverfield, I think I'd be saying some of the same things. The uncertainty of the monster. Yes, it might have scared us. There were some great jump scares, and it certainly passed the time. It went by very, very quickly. But I'm not sure I really got a complete story because we take the perspective we do of two teens that know nothing about what happened here 23 years ago. I don't know what we know by the end of it other than, yeah, it ate his eyes. A sick, stupid punchline. It's Giselle, man. I mean, I really feel like the bottom line is I could really give it a green arrow if Giselle didn't walk in that police station. My recommendation is that you watch this movie until that hour mark. And when that character walks in, you turn it off. because you're not going to know anything more than you do. You just turn it off and it's recommendable. Keep watching, and that last 25 minutes, it's a killer. I'll be kind and say, I'm going to table Arrows. I do this sometimes. I want to see the next one. I'm going to look at this more as an evolving series, a trilogy, if you will. If they're able to tell me a lot more about the Creeper next time, if I get all that's unsatisfying and murky addressed and I like it, then I feel like, yeah, maybe this was worth going through. If it's just a good setup that collapses, that's a red arrow.
So if there was no sequel, you'd red arrow this.
Yeah, that's correct. But I will put binoculars on my peepers, look to the future, and hope that what is solidly green for about 30 minutes can be redeemed from what fell apart at the end of this movie.
I'm going to give it a recommend. I mean, there's no shock there. I tried to put it in the book. I've only seen this film maybe four times. I saw it in theaters. I saw it once on video with Marjorie. I watched it when I was going to write my review for the book for it, and now. And the past couple times I've watched it, I definitely noticed the silliness of the Creeper's MO. If he never drove a truck, I could go with it all so much more. But the fact that I'm assuming it's a stick shift, so he's learned how to drive a manual. It gets funnier and funnier. But this is a movie that embraces its humor. I do like the design of the Creeper. It would fit very well with the Movie Maniacs figures I was collecting back when this movie came out. I laugh at the right points of this film, and I really root for our characters. It took me three viewings to not get really upset that Justin Long died at the end. I mean, seriously, I like seeing him on screen, and to see him with his eyes gouged out, it always makes me really sad. So I like this movie, and when I watched it, I was not as cognizant of the magical Negro stereotype trope that comes in. But I don't find her to be ruinous here. I like that she is able to drop some knowledge about every 23 years, 23 days, and explain to us why the movie's called what it is.
I mean, as much as we can understand it, he plays a record.
It also comes on the radio. Anytime that they hear that song, he will come, including the time Giselle herself sings it.
Does he own the radio station?
I don't think so, but maybe he has investments.
Again, what do we know about the time he takes off? That is something I'm wondering when we get to the sequel. Presumably, it's going to pick up 23 years in the future.
We'll talk about that next time, but this movie was a big hit. MGM had no faith in it because they wanted the Creeper to talk more, and yet they wanted no humor. Coppola was actually Salva's biggest advocate. Salva was going to go, "Yes, sir, Mr. MGM, man, I'll do what you want." Coppola's like, "No, we're going to let Salva have his vision." And so MGM's like, "Well, fuck this movie. We're dumping it on a shit weekend. We're dumping it on Labor Day." And this movie broke the record. It was the number one top grossing movie for Labor Day weekend ever. And as you mentioned, it made $40 million domestic, $60 million total. And Salva himself says, "Who knows how much more we could have made if 9/11 didn't happen."
Oh!
Yeah, I was definitely looking at 2001 Labor Day and thinking, man, that is right before people stopped watching movies for a while.
Yeah, I completely forgot its proximity. I remember very well where I was 9/11. I do not remember this movie being at just 10, 11 days before it. But because of its success, they were able to convince Salva to come back. We'll talk about its circumstances next time.
Fingers crossed that something can be conveyed that is not here.
But what is here is our donors. And I just want to say thank you to all our generous donors who went platinum level. Thank you for sticking with us, especially if you were one who donated earlier thinking we were getting Cloverfield and we switched. Thank you so much for your support and your generosity as we ring in the new year. What a better time for Jeepers Creepers than when we're singing Auld Lang Syne. But I do want to resolve to always thank you, our donors, for supporting us.
Hear, hear. It's been an incredible run, and we're close to the end. Only two more films, and we're done.
Until next time, keep on creeping on.
Jeepers Creepers, where'd you get those creepers? Jeepers Creepers. Where'd you get those eyes?
We threw everything we had at it, Danny. All the fire and manpower this building had to offer.
And it just made a whole lot of noise and flew off with exactly what it wanted.
Thank you again for your support of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
You actually did something decent by me. That's a part of history you can't change.
Support from listeners like you is what keeps Now Playing able to podcast week after week.
I'm thinking past the point of my own selfish little existence now.
The film discussed in this podcast and all audio clips and music used are the property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. This podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created or produced the film analyzed herein. Now Playing Podcast is an independent movie review podcast with no affiliation with any company involved in the publishing, creating, or distribution of that film series.
Is something real? I heard it was a bunch of bullshit.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Truth be, I'd be lying if I said I knew that telling you this would do any good.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2018, all rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Recording. I'm just double checking that it's getting the Yeti. And that it's a good volume. I mean, we're going to crank the level a little bit more.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume, pump up the volume. Dance, dance.
Boom. Okay.
Terry. Hey, Derry and Trish do...
And you do not want Giselle, Gay Hartman, beep.
You can't pick her name. Oh,
no, you
that's
don't
the character's name.
Yeah, it's the character. They did it specifically.
I thought it was the actress's name, but no. She's Belcher. Do you recommend Jeepers Creepers? Marjorie.
First of all, you gotta get it on.
Jeepers Creepers.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, with the year 2011, I mean, yes, quickly, people stopped going to the movies. Very much after Labor Day, that was...
Do you mean 2001?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was definitely looking at 2011 Labor... I was definitely looking at 2001...